Welcome. You are now listening to the Anything Goes podcast with your hosts, Greg and Alex.
Yo, Johnny Knoxville, what are these people listening to?
Anything Goes?
This is Mecca, and you're listening to the Anything Goes podcast. We're talking about you that night.
Check. One. 2, 1, 2, 3, 5, 12, 14. Welcome to, you guessed it, a brand new episode of the Anything Goes podcast. This is like 200 and something, I don't know anymore, but here we are doing it again. Another week, another episode. We are here and you are there.
And I am here.
And you are there. And I'm here.
I'm here.
I'm Greg, a.k.a. Crazy Greg, a.k.a. Pooh Bear, and you are?
I am Alex.
All right, so we have Tony D on the episode today.
Yeah.
This is actually one of a few of the vendors that we're going to have on from the iHeart Horror Convention.
Yes.
Yeah, so he's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood out to us when we met him.
Yeah.
He really did.
He had a whole setup.
Yeah, a nice setup
with,
too.
Yeah, with all of his books. Yeah,
and it was impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, it just...
I love a good series.
Yeah, and it just stood out.
It did.
Yeah. It was weird. It was like we walked to his room and we were just
like, hey, what's up?
Drawn to him. Yeah. And it's funny because he was in the same room as guys from Clerks.
Right, but we went right to him.
Yeah, and it's like we gravitated to him first.
Yeah. Well, he's a nice guy also.
Yes.
Which super so nice. Were that, you know,
but we didn't
was.
Know that going no, up didn't. To him though. Yeah. You know, and we just were like,
He has some kind of...
It was trance. Weird. We got like lifted up off the ground and we like...
That was the... What is that?
Teleported
guy,
up to him. Yeah. But he was super cool. And I don't know. It was nice talking to him.
Yeah.
It was like an easy conversation. Right. I don't know. It was weird. It felt like we knew him longer than...
Right.
Than just meeting him.
Yeah. Those are always the best conversations. Yeah.
So do you want to play a game really quick?
Sure. Go.
All right. So I'm holding something in my hand.
Yes, I see.
Can you guess what it is? You're sitting next
I ordered
to me.
It.
Ah, oh, yeah. Well, there goes that game. But yeah, you want to tell the people what you ordered?
I ordered The Pioneers, book seven.
Yes.
The Paradox Pioneers. So I asked if we needed to read them in order because this one kind of stood out to you because the man that's on it, his outfit.
Yeah.
Reminded you of.
Of Gaston.
Yeah.
So two things. The guy standing to the left. So we bought book seven of. What he's working on now, 14, but there's 13 of them out. So two things stood out. The guy on the left looked like Gaston.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know. That's cool. Yeah, I played Gaston in a play.
You did.
And then the other thing is the guy on the TV kind of looks like me.
I knew you were going to say that.
Really?
I.
Is it because it's true?
No, because I. Because you're you. That's why.
Yeah, it's some like, I don't know, 18-year-old in shape guy.
With no shirt on.
Yeah, there you go.
You never have a shirt on, I will say that.
I do never have a shirt on.
And our neighbor's son, who's like 8, he never has a shirt on either. And we say,
yeah.
His mom jokes like.
Yeah. But really, we didn't know which book to buy. And we're like, oh, maybe we'll just buy the first one.
Yeah.
And then we're scrolling through the Amazon list and this guy looked like Gaston. So we're like, all right, we got to buy him. It. So here we are, The Pioneers, book 7, The Paradox Piney.
Mm-hmm. I like Piney.
Yeah.
I like that. Like, it's I cool. like the name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Tony D talks all about the Piney books. So, any questions will be answered in this interview.
Yes.
And it's all about the Jersey Devil.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a cool topic. I like it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I actually had a bunch of questions that I wanted to ask him because he did some work on the Simpsons comics.
Yes, the bongos. I remember him saying yes.
And then, I don't know, you're just talking and talking. I got so lost in the conversation. Right, what were we doing? Right. And then afterwards, it's like, oh my goodness.
I didn't mention that.
We talked nothing about The Simpsons.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. We never spoke to an author before. And I was just interested in the whole process.
Right,
so.
Right, of course.
And then by the time we were done, I was like, damn, I forgot. But he did. He worked on The Simpsons comics, The Bongo, which was owned by Mac Groening of The Simpsons.
Right.
And he wrote some of the stories in the Bart Simpson comic. And he worked on a Treehouse of Horror.
Crazy.
On the Ghost Bashers episode.
Nice.
Which was the Ghostbusters parody.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Yeah. And we also had Bill Morrison on the podcast.
Yes, years ago.
Yeah, back in the day, who also worked on the Bongo comics.
Yeah.
So everything comes full circle.
Yeah.
It's funny. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we have Tony D today, and he's going to tell you and us all about his writing and how to sell books on Amazon.
Right.
And how to write a book and how not to get lost in bad contracts in life and all that stuff. So yes. It's interesting. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to start a podcast, just to learn about things I don't know about.
Yeah.
So
it has to feel really cool to write the book and then like get it in the mail, like the hard copy.
Mm.
Like to be like, wow, look, I made this and here's my hard work.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I always thought of that.
Uh-huh. And it's crazy because he's to the point where he can write a book in 4 months.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love reading. I don't know if I could write a whole book.
Like ever? Or
yeah,
oh,
like yeah. I don't think it'd be good enough. It wouldn't like I wouldn't be able to like have it flow.
Yeah, I feel like my problem would be like I would feel like it's never done.
It's yeah, like
you
when
know,
do you,
yeah.
That's why you do a series.
Yes, true.
Yeah,
true. Because
you can just tell little bits of the story.
True. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So maybe I'll do that then. I can write a story, a series.
What would it be about?
Chuck E. Cheese.
That's our life right now. Yeah. So. Don't say that word. Don't wake up.
You're right. You're right, they're obsessed.
You'll hear cha-cha cheese. Cha-cha cheese. So
anyway, let's get into the interview with Tony D. Once again, we met him at the IHOT Horror Convention.
Yes.
And we're going to have other people, other vendors that we met and cool people. And everyone there was so nice. You can go back to the episode and listen to it.
Yeah.
And we spoke all about it. But we're going to do more on it. And I'm sure next year we'll just continue with the vendors there.
Yeah.
Whoever's there. Maybe we'll have Tony D back on.
Maybe.
Because he said he's writing a screenplay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but he couldn't talk too much about it. So
can't wait
once
to
it's
about
out,
it.
Yeah, then we can get him back on.
Cool.
All right, well, we're going to link the Pioneer's website to this episode so you guys can read all about it and pick up one of the books.
Yeah.
Or two of them, or all 13.
Yes.
Because they ain't that pricey, so... That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
like
the
it.
Best part.
Yeah.
Well, no, the book is the best part.
Yeah.
That's the easiest part.
The easiest. Yeah. The most convenient to us.
There you go.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a pretty easy read.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah.
So
I like
don't know
that.
What the easiest part is.
It would probably take me, let me see, to read this book.
Oh, you're not a reader. I could read this book.
Yeah.
Because it's such an easy read too,
mm-hmm.
I could read this book probably in like, if I really had the time to just sit down and read, probably like an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I would say for me, if I had the...
How many days?
Realistically, let me see. How many chapters are...
Well, there's 160-ish pages. 150. Well, yeah. Chapter 13 starts on 150.
13 so. Chapters. It would probably, realistically, like a month. I'd
read
the book.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. See, right now it takes me so long because... Now when I get to read is at night and I'm exhausted and I end up falling asleep. You fall asleep always. You've always fallen asleep when we watch movies, whatever. So I can't see you being able to read books.
Yeah. Well, I would try to do like a chapter a day.
Okay.
So 13 days, I would try. All right. 13 days.
2 weeks because you'd skip a day maybe.
Yeah. And then the problem is I'm always going to have to like go back and reread.
Like you do with movies?
Yeah. Like the last.
Oh, he's the worst person to watch movies with. So not only does it take you probably about 4 days to watch the movie... When, let's say you watch a half hour of it, when you go to watch more of it, you have to watch 15 minutes before that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah.
really only watch 15 minutes of it.
Well, yeah, because I have to get myself back into, like...
The movie.
Yeah.
I could literally watch it 2 weeks later.
When I watch a movie, I put myself in it like I'm one of the actors.
No, you don't. You fall asleep.
Well, yeah, I fall asleep and I'm, like, dreaming that I'm in a movie.
Right, sure.
And then Freddy Krueger comes.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
They're making, supposedly, a Freddy Krueger series.
Yeah, Rob Zombie.
Well, not
right?
a series, a show, a couple episodes. Like, I think it's like 10 episodes. Something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see where that leads to, like this episode led to.
Yeah. We always wander off on random things.
All right. Well, let's do it. Let's get into the interview.
Okay, let's go. Because
it's different, and I like different.
Yeah.
So it's something we've never had before on all these episodes.
Right.
So check it out. Tony D, The Pineys. And that's it. Hit us up. Hit him up. And for reals, pick up a copy of his book. We did, and we'll post it.
Yeah,
we'll hold it and we'll post it and we'll love it forever.
And we'll read it.
And we'll read it. You'll read it, and then I'll read it, and we'll compare notes. We have to take notes.
Okay.
Okay.
People like to enjoy the book that they read, taking notes. You and your notes.
Mental notes.
Sure.
Take mental notes.
Yeah.
All right. Is that too much for you?
No, that's fine.
All right. Mental.
You're a mental case. Okay. Well, let's get into this interview because we're about to get silly.
Yeah. Once again, I am Greg, a.k.a. Crazy Greg, a.k.a. Pooh Bear, and you are... And
I am Alex.
Listen, hit up Tony D.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
Just hit him up. All right, and pick up the copy, and we'll talk. Hit us up. Let us know. We love hearing from you guys. We will be back next week, as always, with a brand new episode of the Anything Goes podcast with Greg and Alex. And that's it.
You're pretty much... You checked all the boxes.
Check. All right. Check. Check. Oh, no. 1, 2, 1.
What did
you
I
did
do?
It to yourself.
What
you
did it to I yourself. Do?
All right. Well, that's it. Here's the interview with Tony D on the Anything Goes podcast. Be good, be crazy, and we'll see you real soon.
Bye.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
Tell these fine-looking people where they can find us.
Well, they could find us on Instagram at AnythingGoesPodNY, on Twitter at AnythingGoesNY, and shoot us an email at agpodny@gmail.com.
That's right. And y'all can listen to all of our episodes on any streaming platform where podcasts can be found. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review, because anything goes. With Greg and Alex.
Phone home.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Anything Goes podcast. So in over 200 episodes that we've done on this podcast, today is a first. It's the first time you've ever had an author join us. We met this author at the iHeart Horror Convention a few weeks back in New Jersey. And something just reached out and connected with us when we saw you and we saw your table and your books. And we're joined by Tony D, who is the author of the series, The Pineys. So, Tony, thanks for joining us on the Anything Goes podcast.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Yeah, we're very excited. This is a first for us. And this is part of the reason why we wanted to start a podcast is for people like you who are just different and stuff that we're interested in but don't really know much about. And we can learn all about it today, so... We're excited for this one.
Awesome. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know about the Jersey Devil.
That's great. Well, I guess that's a great start of why the Jersey Devil. Why did you pick this to write about?
When I was a kid in grammar school, I had to do a book report, and I was looking for the shortest book in the library. And I looked across the library, and I saw The Red Spine of the Jersey Devil book written by McCloy and Miller from 1974, and I picked that up and read it and did my book report. So
that's so funny. And were you scared of the story that you read?
No, it's an interesting legend, and it's been around for 289 years.
Wow.
New Jersey's Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster. It's our official state demon. We're the only state with an official state demon. And it's a great story, and there are many variations on the story.
Right. So are these books your variation, or is it kind of like based on others?
A lot of it's my variation on the legend and sort of retelling a lot of the folk tales. So,
okay.
Back in the 90s, I did a comic book called The Jersey Devil. And the comic went 12 issues, and I promoted it for years. And I would go from comic show to comic show, and I would ask people, have you ever seen The Jersey Devil? And some people would tell me stories, so I know those stories. And there are many other tales in the Pine Barrens, either associated with The Jersey Devil or in the same region.
Right. So if you didn't have this book assignment in the first grade, what do you think you'd be doing today or writing about?
I don't know. Who knows? I'd be lost.
That's so funny. And for those that don't know much about the Jersey Devil, is there anything you could tell us as far as like the history?
Well, let me tell you the basic legend for those of you out there who've never heard of it. So the basic legend, and there are many variations on it, but the most acceptable one goes something like this. In the 1730s, probably around 1735, there was a woman named Leeds, or Mother Leeds, they sometimes call her,
okay,
who lived in Leeds Point, New Jersey. Now, this is in the Pine Barrens. It's right near the town of Smithville, which is a big tourist attraction, and on Route 9. And in Leeds Point, she was the 13th child in her family, and she gave birth to a 13th child. Hmm. And this was in December-ish, wintertime. There was a big storm, and as she was giving birth, she cried out, "Curse this child, let the devil take it."
Wow.
And the Jersey Devil was born, this horrible monster. It ate the family, flew out the chimney, and has been haunting the Pine Barrens ever since.
Wow.
And that's kind of the basic story, and then there are many variations on it.
So is that why your series is called The Pineys?
The Pineys is a reference to the people who live in the Pine Barrens. So in the early 1900s, there were elitists who ran the newspapers in Philadelphia. And they would do stories, but they looked down upon the people of South Jersey because they were all farmers and maybe not as well educated. So they called us rubes, they called us hillbillies, and they called us pineys. So it was like, "Oh, you ignorant pineys, you don't read anything." Back then it was a term, a derisive term, and then these days it's a term of endearment. So people call each other pineys. There's Piney Power, Piney Pride. "Oh, I live in a pine barrens. I'm a piney." That kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. Good to know. And what age range would you say these pineys books are geared towards?
Well, everybody asks me that, and I always have the same response. I always tell them there's language and violence in the book, but I don't know what anybody's offended by anymore. So
right,
just read it yourself. I mean, I have a fan. She's 10 years old, and she's read all my books. And then I have, you know, other adults who go, "Oh, my God, language and violence. Let me run away." So you never know with people. You know, you should always, if you have kids, you should look at what they're reading and
of
decide
course
for yourself.
Absolutely, yep.
It's the kind of thing that I used to read when I was a kid, but my mother hated all that. Like, I would read comic books and Dungeons and Dragons and heavy metal, and my mother was like, "Why are you reading all that? Hey, don't read that stuff." But I read it anyway. So it depends upon your kid. You know, some kids,
of course,
they're fine. You can give them anything. Other kids, maybe you have to monitor them a little bit.
Yeah, but that's like anything. I mean, roller coasters and haunted houses we go on and go through, and, you know, we see some kids that are fine and some kids can't make it through the first room of a haunted house. So,
yep.
Yeah, so same thing. I get it, yeah. And so you said this 10-year-old girl read all your books. How many books are in this series of the Pineys?
Right now there are 13, and the 14th book drops probably in a week or two. I'm just waiting for the cover, and I got to do a little bit of editing. And so maybe by this weekend or definitely next week, I should have it posted on Amazon.
Nice.
This will be book 14. This one is called The Pirate Piney. So it touches upon all the pirate legends of South Jersey.
Okay. And do all the books connect with each other? Or are they like separate stories?
They all connect because the series pitch is it's about a family of hunters that hunt the kin of the Jersey Devil.
Mm.
So the premise is in the 1730s, Mother Leeds was a witch. And she opened the portals of hell and flooded the Pine Barrens with devils. But in the neighboring village of Apes Hat, New Jersey, the villagers formed a secret hunting society to hunt down the devils and send them back to hell. And their ancestors continue the hunt to this day. So now we're in the modern era, and we have all this great history. And through the characters, I tell the history and the folk tales and the characters. It's kind of like Ghostbusters with drunken hillbillies.
Okay, that's definitely an interesting mix. I'm sure. I'm sure they're good reads. I really am, and we're gonna look at this Amazon list, and I actually checked it out today, and there's a lot there, and a lot of good ratings also on Amazon. I saw
yes
that as well. Yeah,
to all who gave me a good rating, thank you.
Yeah, we saw that. And how do you even get your book on Amazon? How does that happen?
Oh, it's actually very easy. So you make an account, you need and then you have to make the sort of account where you can accept money from Amazon. There's some tax stuff involved. It's not that hard. You got to fill out a bunch of stuff online and then turn it in, and then Amazon approves you.
Okay.
You have to type to some sort of place where you could receive money, like a bank account or checking account, something like that. And then once all that's set up, after you finish writing your book, you have to go through the parameters that Amazon needs in order to print it and make it a Kindle, if you want to make it a Kindle as well. Wow. My books are on Kindle and print.
Interesting.
So there's tutorials on the site. It's just a lot of formatting. Probably the hardest thing is formatting the cover for the print book.
Mm.
It's a little harder. You got to make sure you don't block like the barcode or put artwork underneath the barcode. That's important, you know, and make sure it's the right size. But the nice thing about it is you can upload it, look at it, see if it's right. If it's right, you can say go. If not, you just, I made a mistake. I'll redo it. And even if you make a mistake and hit publish, you can go back and always fix it. So
interesting.
And then once you get everything uploaded, within 24 hours, the ebook will go live, and within 72 hours, the print book goes live, and then you could order the print book for yourself. You can order them with a discount, and then have them shipped right to your house, just like any other Amazon product. And then you can sell them, you know, like I do, at conventions and whatnot.
Right. So awesome.
Good.
Cool. Have you ever thought about an audiobook for your books?
I have an audiobook for the first Pioneer's book.
Really?
And it did all the voices. So there's
wow.
that. I haven't been around to doing any more of them because it's a bit time intensive. And it's just, but I do want to do more, but I have the first one up. So more to come.
Yeah. That's so cool. And you said you edit your own books?
Yeah. I, you know, various programs to help me. Mm. And there's plenty of software out there. I don't always get everything, but it's good enough.
Right.
I think. I mean, look, the problem I've always had with editors, some editors are really good. Other editors, they want to rewrite your book.
Mm.
And they're all frustrated writers. But there's very few people who are actual editors. Like, I want to edit. you know, most of them are writers. They just, right. you know, they just do it as a gig. You know, it's nice to have fresh eyes on the books or whatever. But I find that the computer programs work perfectly well, you know, and I'm kind of, you know, I kind of just want to get the damn thing done and get it out there.
Right.
But major mistakes and you can always fix them. I mean, I fixed stuff on Amazon that, you know, a month later I was like, oh man, I made some typos here. I better fix them. And then I re-upload the book and it's fixed.
So funny. Yeah. And what about the illustrations for your book, the cover and stuff?
The covers are done by Vig Starmax, and he's a Malaysian artist I work with. I do a webcomic site called The Webcomic Factory, and Vig also draws Tales of Pizza, which is a webcomic about my days as a pizza delivery guy, and that's fun. It's a 3-panel strip, and he's really talented. Man, I wanted to do the first cover, and I was just, like, blown away. And I wanted that, like, pulpy feel, and he really nailed it. So he's done them all. So I'm just waiting for cover 14, and he just cranks them out. It is really good.
Crazy.
With a lot of comic book guys over the years. Most of them very, very good. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of talent out there if you look for it.
I'm sure. Yep. It's crazy, though, how people can just, I don't know, just instantly make a cover like that and just such quick turnaround. And even for you, I mean, writing all these books, how long does it take you to write one book, let alone 14?
Well, with the Pioneers, they're novellas, so they're a little bit shorter. They're about 80 pages in single-spaced in Word Perfect or Word. So they're not that long. And now that I'm up to, it's a little bit, I always say, like, being a writer is kind of like being a professional athlete. You know, as long as you keep doing it, you stay in shape, and then you're ready to go.
Mm.
You can't just start sprinting. You know, you can't take 2 months off and then immediately just start cranking out 10 pages. You kind of got to build up to that. So it's just about, like Stephen King says, writing every day. And, you know, I have, like, goals, small goals during the week. Like, I want to get so many pages done in a week or a day or a month or whatever. So for the Pioneers, I have a lot of fun writing it because the characters are so much fun and there's so much to say and do with them. that I have in mind. So it's really just a joy. It's like a break for me to write the Pineys. I got to write other stuff in order to like keep the lights on sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm working on a screenplay right now.
No way.
For a client, and he's an actor, and this is actually a sequel to another screenplay I wrote. He's almost done shooting the first one, so that's going to be fun.
Huh? And where's that going to be released?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay,
it's edited. I'm not sure how much I can say about it, but it's like a murder mystery, and that's about all I can say about it right now. Right now, we're in the middle of changing the title too, so I can't even tell you what it's called. But it's going to be what I do for a lot of low budget screenplay clients, because I am a screenwriter, is I will say to them, oh, you're a filmmaker. So, what's your budget? And, after we work out some pay for me, I go, what do you have access to? And what I do then is I write a screenplay according to the locations and resources. Mm. So if you have access to a creepy house and a park and an apartment building, whatever, I'll write all the locations in places like that.
Interesting.
Or there'll be locations that you can cheat. As we say, you're going to cheat them, right? So it's easy to cheat, for instance, like a doctor's office, because you just set up in the corner of an apartment with a wall and a desk, and you throw some papers around, a stethoscope, and boom, you got a doctor's office.
So funny.
Stuff like that.
It's so funny to think now how many things we've seen on TV shows and movies, and it's just a corner of an apartment building.
Yeah, that's all it is. It just has to look that way.
Yeah.
And often it doesn't have to look that way very long. I was just doing a video about this. In my living room, I have like a fireplace, and one side of the room is a stone wall, and then the other side is just a blue wall.
Mm.
And I was in the video, like, I was standing in front of the blue wall. I said, see this blue wall? I can make it look like an office. I said, if I flip the camera around, it'll look like a steakhouse, and you could do some sort of romantic scene in front of a fireplace around, and then make it a doctor's office. You wouldn't know.
Right. So funny. Any favorite Piney book of the ones you've written? I don't know if it's hard to choose one, but
it is.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because it's like choosing between my children.
Let me ask you this then. If somebody's first getting introduced to the Pineys, should they start with book number one and work their way that way?
Most people do.
Yeah.
Most people are like, oh, I got to start with the first one. But you don't have to, because what I tried to do is write them like a TV show episode. So I reintroduce the characters and, you'll just get it, I think.
Yeah.
And you can go back and learn some things throughout 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm.
You read 1 to 4, you'll be pretty caught up in terms of the characters and where the series is going. With the books after that, I concentrate more on some of the other Piney legends, and I get deeper into the sort of lore that the series is. As you write these things, you get more and more accustomed to clarifying everything,
Right.
And that's something I learned with doing improv for years. You constantly are clarifying and heightening and polishing what you're doing. And then as the series progresses, it gets more and more clear what's going on.
Got it. Makes sense. And if you're like out at a restaurant for dinner or something, do you ever just get like ideas that you just have to throw on your phone in that moment?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the places I get ideas from, a lot of times it's books that write about the various ghost stories and legends. Sometimes it's just historical research. Like, part of book 14 is based on a guy who may or may not have been a pirate. Nobody's really sure. And his name was John Batiste. And Batiste lived in the 1820s, and he was on a ship. And he was the steward on the ship, and he was black. He wasn't a slave, even though there was slavery at this time. He was a free man, but there was a mutiny on the ship, and they killed the captain and his cabin boy, who also was, I think, his nephew, and threw him overboard. It was horrific.
Hmm.
Now, according to the accounts, Stewart wanted nothing to do with this mutiny. So they basically told him, listen, John, you got to take some of the money or else we're going to start to worry about you. So they gathered up a collection and put it in a hat and put it on his like bed and said, here's the money, take it. So when they docked in Philadelphia, Batiste took the money and left, and he went to Cape May. And then it gets weird. About a year later, they started catching all the crew. They started prosecuting everybody for the mutiny. Now, some guys they hung. Some guys disappeared into the wind. They never found them. Some guys were considered innocent for whatever reason. But they sent some investigators to Cape May to interview John Batiste. And when they got there, what they found was he had purchased an enormous amount of land in Cape May, like huge tracts. He had a gigantic plantation. He was doing extremely well. He had his wife and his kids there. And the local authorities questioned him and decided he was completely innocent. And they just basically cut him loose. Now, the rumor is, was Batiste a pirate? Was he part of the mutiny? Did he take so much money that he bribed his way out of it? Or did he, in fact, you know, was he in fact innocent and he just was a wise investor and just happened to do very well for himself? Nobody's really sure.
Right. Okay. So that's interesting.
Kind of what the story's about. It's about the eventual what happened to John Batiste kind of thing. Like, nobody really knows, but I did sort of a fictionalized version of Batiste, and I connected it into the other pirates of the golden age of piracy, which happened about 200 years prior.
Okay. And where do you come up with the names of the characters in the books?
Well, let's see if you can guess. The four main cousins' name are Hemingway, Shelley, Milton, and Lewis.
Huh. Hemingway, Shelton, Milton, and Lewis. Is it Jerry Lewis?
There's a few other clues. If you look at the names of all the hunters in the hunting lodge, the other names, all the other cousins are Hugo, Wallace, Joyce, Carl, Lee.
Are they musicians?
Anyway, is the biggest giveaway, I think.
Are they musicians?
Close. They're creative.
Create. Okay. I don't know. I'm not getting this one.
They're all famous authors. They're all the last names of fame.
Got it.
So Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway, Shelley, Mary Shelley, Lewis, C.S. Lewis.
Okay. Got it. I knew Hemingway. I didn't know the Lewis one.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
So every Galloway relative that's a hunter in the series has a first name, which is supposed to be the last name of a famous author.
Okay. Got it. All connects now. And any favorite book that's not yours that you have out there?
That's not mine. Well, I love Kurt Vonnegut's books. I read all those just about. Breakfast of Champions used to be one of my favorites. What else? I mean, I like a lot of books about the Pine Barrens and stuff like that these days. I was just rereading Phantom of the Pines, which is to the original Jersey Devil book, written by the same two guys. And they expand upon further details on the Jersey Devil legend.
God, is the other New Jersey Devils your favorite sporting team?
I'm not like a sports guy at all. Okay. But I'm obligated to root for them at some level.
Okay.
You know, I'm a South Jersey guy, so everybody here likes the Philly teams.
Okay. So it's not much New Jersey teams out there.
Yeah, there's really not a lot. Although I was outraged when they attempted to move the New Jersey Devils to Nashville. That just seemed wrong.
Yeah. Imagine that. I wonder if they would have kept the same team name. I guess they would have, right?
I don't know. The Nashville New Jersey Devils doesn't seem right.
No, really, no. So what exactly is the process of writing a book when you sit and, you know, from beginning to end? I know it could be a long process, but is there like the steps that you have to take?
A lot of times I like to come up with the ending. You know, I like to have a good ending. And if I don't have the ending, you know, for Pineys, I usually decide on one of the legends and how that's going to incorporate into the book somehow.
Okay.
And so, like, for book 15, I'm writing book 15 now. I'm about halfway through it. So I wasn't quite sure how it would end. but I knew I wanted a particular location as part of it, which is another book that's going to have a lot of North Jersey stuff in it. Mm. And there's a particular location, which I won't give away, that I wanted to use. And then once I did that and sort of started writing it, and as I write, I do research. I go, well, I need something like from this time period. Let me read about it. And then I'll read about it and go, oh, this will work, kind of thing. So there are some legends in North Jersey that tie together kind of well. So use them.
Nice. And do you have a set number in mind of how many books will be in the Piney series?
No, but I do have an ending. So I'm keeping it pretty open-ended for now.
Okay.
My goal would be to get Don Pendleton, who wrote Mac Bolan, the Executioner, wrote something like 333 books in his series. And I thought, oh, man, I'd love to do that. But that would take me like 111 years in my current. So crazy. I don't know. If the money kicks up, maybe I can do more than three books a year. Right now I'm doing three. So if originally I was going to do four, but it just wasn't feasible. So yeah. I kept it at three. But perhaps if I get a big windfall or something, or the books really start selling, I'm gonna kick it up to like four or five. I definitely want to do like a sort of a nonfiction guide to the Pines at some point, mentioning all the places I talked about in the Pineys, you know, doing some more research, but that's going to require a lot of work. You know, true nonfiction books, that's a lot of work. But I'd also have a second series in mind, almost completely unrelated to the Pineys, that I'd like to do. It's a completely different pitch, so I may start doing that. Okay. I got a lot of ideas. I mean, I always do.
Yeah.
You know, it's never a shortage of ideas.
I'm sure. And as far as, like you said, pricing and stuff, is it hard to come up with the price of what to charge for a book?
No, not at all. In fact, Amazon, again, makes that really easy. So it's just about how much do you want. You want to keep it as low as possible so people buy it.
Right, right? Of course. Yep.
So you got a real problem with, I think, other authors, you know, they'll charge $30 a book. And I'm just thinking, I would never, ever in my entire life pay $30 for a fiction book. I just wouldn't pay that.
Right.
I mean, I don't want one. If it was thick enough to justify $30, I wouldn't read one that long.
Mm.
So anything, I would say, maybe you could hit somewhere close to 20. If it was just an amazing book and had an amazing cover and all kinds of great stuff in it, maybe 20. But these guys, you know, and I get, like, some of them have to charge that because they're doing very tight print runs. But if nobody reads it, if you're only selling like three or four people,
yeah,
that's not enough.
Right.
It's just not enough to get your book out there. I mean, you're going to be doing quite a tap dance to get $30 out of a person for one book. It's
just, true.
So lower your prices would be my number one advice. Go to Amazon, you know, at least initially. I'm not so much sure if they do it now, but they used to have a pricing guide.
Okay.
And you could figure out exactly how much you're going to get per book. And then on that, you could say, okay, I'm going to charge X amount of dollars and then get X amount of dollars for every sale. And I'm getting more out of the Amazon book than I was going through publishing, you know?
Right.
I was going through a publisher, and they were great guys. I don't knock them, but I was selling a book for $14, and I was making $1.40 on it.
Come on.
And that was not enough for $14. I mean, it just wasn't enough. And this is in the early 2000s.
So you're going through all the work of writing the book and everything. You're making $1.40 off of $14.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... If I was selling 10 million of them, who cares? I'd be rich.
Yeah.
But when you're out there selling at individual cons and realizing you're working for $1.40, trying to get, but you have to get $14 out of a person, it doesn't work.
Jeez.
So you have to keep the price low. And with Amazon, I'm able to keep the price. I raised the price. I had them at $7.99 or $8, and I had to raise them at the beginning, or about 6 months ago, I finally had to raise them by a dollar. Okay. So now they're $9. A lot of people just give me a 10 and say, keep it. Right. You know? So that's fine. I want the books to be cheap. So people go, oh, let me buy two, you know, and the series. And that's another thing that, you know, writers can do, make it a series, you know, end the story and then start another story with the characters if you can, depending on the kind of book it is. And just people will get into the series, hopefully, and then they're going to buy all the books.
Yep. Yep. So it's funny you say that, because a lot of bands and musicians, it's like Torn. Half of them say that they don't want their music out there for free, and they want people to pay for it. And there's a lot of bands out there that say, you know, give my music for free, because once they hear one or two songs, that they're going to want to hear the rest. And then they'll come and see us play shows and concerts and buy T-shirts. So it's like, you know, just get your stuff out there, and people will like it, and they'll support you. So
exactly.
I agree. Yeah.
You don't have to give away the store all the time. You know, you can give away stuff, then stop giving it away. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, give it for as cheap as possible. You always want to make this stuff as cheap as possible, I say. You know, you still want to make a profit.
Of course. I mean, yeah, you have to make a living as well, but you also want it out there, and you want it accessible for people that they can afford it, and they can come across and fall in love with what you do.
And when it comes to books, selling them online, you want a situation where you have this passive income and people are constantly buying the books. So you want to constantly be feeding the brand or whatever it is, the series, and then have people constantly getting into your book series. So, you know, now I'm up to book 14 coming out, and there are people who are still jumping on board at one and they're buying in. And, you know, I was at a show and somebody already had 1, 2, and 3 and they bought 4, 5, and 6.
Nice.
Very gratifying, because they're probably going to come back to me, I don't know when, and get 7, 8, 9, and or they'll go online and they'll get it. And
I'm sure.
That's the way to do it. You just keep, and you get hundreds of people like that, you're set.
Yeah.
You're going to be cranking them out.
Great. And now when all this is said and done, would you release like a whole complete box set with all the Pioneer's books? Have you thought about something like that?
Yeah, I thought about that. I thought about doing, like, I mean, there's a lot of people who want, like, it for kids. So what I might do someday is I might do a kid's version of the Pioneer's, take out all the cursing and some of the slightly more risque bits, take them out or soften them a little, and then put together like collected editions that call it the Pioneer's for Kids or something, and then maybe sell it to schools, something like that.
Nice.
It depends, you know, or you know, just do collected editions at some point for people who are really into my stuff and they want something a little more high end, or maybe they read it on Kindle but they never bought it, but they would like something for a library kind of, you know, deal. But, you know, I'm not in it to, like, milk it like that necessarily. I'm not saying that's necessarily milking it, but, you know, because they are nice. Like, I knew guys, they did a comic book miniseries, and then they put out the hardback, and the hardback was very nice.
Right.
But they made money on the comic, and they kind of lost money on the hardback. And so it's tough. Like, you want to put things out that people actually want, not just to sort of squeeze them for money. One of the things that happens, unfortunately, with when the corporate guys come in and buy you out or buy into you, is they look for ways to squeeze your fans for as much money as possible. And for a while it works, but they eventually take it to the extreme, because eventually, as an art starts to lose its novelty, they just start squeezing all the money out of it they can. And I was in a produce and last year, and Star Wars was just being squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, in my view. And then I was in the produce stand, and there was Joel, the bananas, a bag of bananas with the Star Wars character on them. And I just thought, oh my God, they've really hit rock bottom here. Like, they talk to Joel and say, oh, would you like to have the Star Wars characters on your bananas? And Joel was, who's not going to buy bananas if Yoda there? Like, it's just so weird to me. Like, I wouldn't want, because in the long term, I think it hurts a brand to do that creatively. You want a brand like, I mean, to me, like Lord of the Rings is one of those brands that has endured for so long because they haven't beaten it to death so far. You know, the movies are great. You know, tried to do this Rings of Power. It's not really working. Most of the fans don't consider it a real piece of the lore anyway. But the Lord of the Rings thing, it's like it endures because it hasn't been beat to death. And that's the way these companies should keep their brands. They shouldn't destroy them. You know, I think Star Trek's really taken it on the chin. And a few other franchises. They've just destroyed them. They've just eked out all the money they can. And somewhere, the sad thing is 10, 15 years down the road, they'll try to come back with a much better series. And it probably won't work because people will be like, oh, no thanks. Not this time. So I think when you look at like Harry Potter, though, you know, that's another one where J.K. Rowling had a lot of control over her creation and she kept it on brand. Still continues to do so. She has a lot of control over her character work. So.
Oh, yeah. Even so obviously, you know, then the Universal Parks in Orlando, and she pretty much has every say in what goes on in the Harry Potter lands of the parks.
Yeah, and why shouldn't it be that way?
Yep.
Why is she's the best person to ask for this stuff?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
the problem, like comic books, went off the rails because all the creators are dead or they've been bought out. I think most of them are dead now. I don't think there's anybody alive who really created any of the major characters anymore. And at least when they were alive, you can go and ask them, like, should this character do this? Should we do this? You know. Brand of condoms for this character. That's what you need. You need the creator around. That's what they're for. They're the last guy. They're the last guardrail. You go to them and they say, no, this is a dumb idea, or yes, this is a pretty good idea. I think our characters would be okay with this. Something like that. So, you know, when the guys are dead, then really it ought to just go right into the public domain after 5 or 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
But so far that hasn't happened.
Right, crazy. But I know they say like after 100 years and it, you know, people can, I guess, I don't know, the copyright is up or whatever it is, and people could start doing different versions of the stories.
Well, initially it was 50 years.
Okay.
And it was actually Disney, I believe, that lobbied Congress, got it extended to 75. Right. And lobbied Congress again and extended it even further.
Jeez.
And that problem with Mickey Mouse, yeah. Superman, Batman, a few others. So Mickey is now in the public domain, or at least the Steamboat Willie one is.
Yeah.
And now, slowly over the next 10 years, you're going to see a lot of characters go into the public domain that they've been trying to keep out of it for years.
Wow.
Superman's going into the public domain not too long.
Oh, boy.
And too, they were created in 1939. So you're talking, I mean, it's not 100 years, but you know, their deals are finally expiring. And here's the thing. Like, if you are going to have a character in the public domain, they still make, Zorro's in the public domain. They still make Zorro movies.
Right.
Thor is in the public domain. They still make stories about Thor. Like, it's only going to help you if it's in the public domain. Yeah, you can look at it like, well, we're going to lose some money. What are you going to lose? What are you going to lose when another company makes a movie with a character you've been known to make movies with for like, I don't know, 50 years, and then they make a movie too, and it's good? That can only help you.
Of course.
That can help you. So these companies, unfortunately, I think they're run by people who just have on tunnel vision when it comes to money. And it's all about the next quarter, the next quarter, the next quarter.
It's unfortunate. Yep.
They don't look at 2 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road. Because that's where the big money is. And that's why a lot of corporations, they don't really get talent. And this has been a battle between the talent and the suits for decades and decades. They just don't get it. They need each other. Like, you know, I'm a talent. I don't want to do taxes. I don't want to do math. I want to go write my crazy stories. But I also don't want to be ripped off. So I'm forced to do math. I'm forced to go, oh, no, let me look at this contract.
Right.
Meanwhile, suits, they shouldn't be involved in making creative decisions. They're all terrible at it. They haven't been doing this. They didn't do improv for 15 years like I did. They don't know what they're doing. So they do should not be standing there going, oh, well, we need some more of this or some more of that. No, they should absolutely not have that power at all. There should be, and this is the way old Hollywood was. Old Hollywood used to say, no. Let the talent do their job. You stay out of it. You know, you give them a little rope. Yeah, you rein them in if they're spending too much money, but you let them do their creative thing. But unfortunately, everything's so out of whack right now.
Yeah, well, it's all about the dollar sign to these people, and that, you know, it's unfortunate. That's what's involved in the creative part of everything.
That's why if you're a creative, you got to know at least the basics. And, you know, I always tell people, don't sign a contract unless you understand it. Don't let the guy who wants you to sign the contract explain it to you. You got to sit down and read it, figure it out, or you got to go to a lawyer or somebody you know who can tell you what it says that you trust. You can't trust the guy who wants you to sign document. And if any of it sounds wonky, don't sign it. Say no. Say no, I like this. Reword it. And when they say, oh no, that's just lawyer speak, it's fine. Understand that whatever's in the contract, that's what happens. Doesn't matter what he said in a meeting. Doesn't matter what he said in the email and said, oh no, it doesn't mean that. It means this, this, and this. None of that's going to matter if you end up in court suing the guy. So you have to know what it says, and it has to say what you want. If it doesn't say what you want, then don't sign it. Yeah. Just say, no, I'm uncomfortable with this. I want it to say X, Y, and Z. I want it to be very clear. I want it to be in plain language that I can understand. And I don't want any of this lawyer gobbledygook, because they don't have to put that in there. You know, there's a couple of terms you got to be familiar with, like force majeure and a few other things. But overall, contracts should be clear and short and precise. And if it's got a bunch of draconian language of how you're going to owe them money, don't say it. Because they'll do that to you. You're going to pay up if this goes south. Oh, no, I'm not.
Whoa. So, imagine that, right?
Yeah. Well, it's happened to people. Yeah.
I believe it. Yep.
So look, this is why self-publishing is so great now. Right now, Amazon, I mean, and I'm saying right now, because who knows what, you know, 5 years they may change the whole system. But right now, it's great to be publishing on Amazon, and I'm making some bank and keeping the lights on. And that's all that matters. So if the whole thing goes kaplooey and I have to move somewhere else, I've got an entire library of stuff I can move.
Nice.
That's what you need. You need a reputation and a brand that people love.
Yeah. And where else can people pick up your books besides Amazon?
Well, I mean, you can catch me at a show. Come to thepinies.com. That's my website with all the Pinies listings. It's part of the Webcomic Factory site, which I also run. And then you can click on signings and appearances, and I'll be in the South Jersey area. Let's see, this month, what am I doing? I'm doing Wednesday, I'll be at the Addison in Egg Harbor, New Jersey at 2 p.m. for the senior center there. I'm doing a talk on how to hunt the Jersey Devil.
Okay, nice.
Today, I'll be at Pemberton Community Library at 6 p.m. for my talk on how to hunt the Jersey Devil. On Saturday, I'll be at Lines in the Pines at Stockton College, starting at 11. I have to leave early at that one, but I'll be there at 11, so catch me early. And then more signings. I got like 4 more signings this month. I got 10 signings next month. I go to comic book shows. I go to historical societies, libraries, senior centers, breweries, distilleries, wineries, any place they'll have me. And I tell them about the origins of the Jersey Devil.
You are for sure a busy man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
how'd you get linked up with the iHeart Horror Convention?
I think I met those guys at a show. And I forget which one. That was a few months back. That was last year. And they invited me and went. Nice. I did their show, their June show. I forget what that one was called. That was that was the one in Sayreville at the historical house, and they had the bands.
Okay.
I did that one in the summer, and then they invited me to the February one, and I'm doing the Cryptid show, which is coming up somewhere on my list. I forget when that's happening. So, those guys are great to me. Oh, there it is, June 1st. Again, yes, that's the June show, the Cryptid show.
There you go.
So, all these shows are great for me. You know, it allows me to talk about the Jersey Devil legend. And the great thing about the Jersey Devil legend, as opposed to, say, Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster, it has a lot of history to it. You know, it's connected to the early history of the United States and New Jersey, you know, and it's connected to real people.
Yeah.
The Leeds family were real people that lived in South Jersey. Daniel Leeds was the patriarch, and he originally was based out of Crosswicks, New Jersey, and he had a falling out with the Quakers, who were big players in colonial America, because he wrote books on theology they didn't like. And then he moved down south near Smithville and founded Leeds Point. And then a branch of his family was Deborah and Japhet Leeds. Japhet was one of his sons or grandsons, I forget. And Deborah was his wife. She's considered the woman who is probably Mother Leeds. And the historical record seems to indicate that they had at least 12 children. And in their family Bible, where you would list your children in the 1700s, they had 12 names and a 13th space that was blank. And that blank space is supposed to be the Jersey Devil.
Crazy. It's really interesting. It really is how it's all based on. Yeah.
Historical record, and it's a history of New Jersey itself.
There you go. So so let me ask you this question now.
Sure.
In 100 years from now, right, when all this is said and done and all your Piney books are out and done and completed, what do you want people to remember the name Tony Diaz?
Well, I would like to be remembered as, first and foremost, the most hilarious man who ever lived, and, which will be easy to tell because you'll read the books and laugh.
Okay.
You know, it's, to me, it's like, you can't do important work unless you're doing something that is actually important. You know, there's a lot of guys, you know, they're well-meaning, maybe they're writing good stories, but their stories are just, you know, they're just fluff, but they don't connect to really anything. You know, you have to connect to something, whether it's a truth in your own life or it's, you know, telling something that's important. I think my stories, you know, they're important. A lot of people they come up to me and they thank me for what I'm doing. Like, they just thank me. Like, thank you for doing this. Mm. When they say that, it's like, wow, they really believe in this. You know, they believe in me, but they also believe in that it's important to tell these stories, you know? As we get into this digital age where people are just locked into their phones, I think it's important to hold on to these stories. There's a real oral tradition of the Jersey Devil, of just people who have just told the story again and again and again. That's the only reason the story survives, is because for literally 289 years, people in South Jersey have been telling this story to their kids over and over again. And it's always the same thing. Like, you have a kid, and maybe they're getting to that age where they might run into the woods without supervision and not listen to you.
Yeah,
and you want them to be cautious, but it's, you know, you want them to also be on their own. You want them to make good choices. So the folktale provides a function, because you say to them, "Ooh, don't go in the woods. The Jersey Devil at you." And then the kid, when he thinks about running into the woods by himself, he thinks twice about that. Maybe I'll bring a friend, or maybe I won't do this today.
Right.
And maybe I'll be careful. And that was sort of the function of the Jersey Devil legend, I think. And so it's important to keep that alive, I think, because I think in the future it'll still be important.
Got it. Well, I love it. And we're looking forward to seeing what the future holds for you.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We're going to link your website to this episode so people can, and the Amazon link as well, so people can find your book and find your future signings.
Awesome.
Great,
awesome.
And we're definitely going to cross paths again in the future, and when we do, we're going to come to your table and pick up a book, and you have to sign it for us and autograph it.
Absolutely.
Sound like a deal?
That's a deal, buddy.
Great. All right, Tony, we really appreciate it, and anything else you have coming on, you're always welcome to come back and talk about it, and when this movie gets completed and more details, we'd love to hear about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll get you back.
Great, please do. All right, Tony. We will talk soon. Thank you so much for your time.
Have a good night.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Anything Goes podcast with Greg and Alex. See you real soon, suckers.